Well, good morning. It's Monday morning, and your host is Glenn Coble on A Progressive Life. I appreciate you coming, joining me this morning. I'm getting better. All my fans that are concerned about my health, I'm getting a lot better. I still have a cough, and I have a little bit of a sore throat, but things are getting better. And that's I still can't, after my little fall on my front stoop, I still can't lay down flat, so I have to lay in my couch sitting upright. But that's even getting better. So do not feel sorry for me. I'm doing fine. I was listening to my wife this morning. She did not want to listen to the political stuff that I listened to, so she was watching Father Knows Best on the cable this morning. And I yelled out to her, "Is Robert Young wearing a tie?" And she said, "Yes." I said, "Is he at home?" "Yes." And the more I thought about it, then I asked her, "Did your dad always wear a tie?" Well, her father was a doctor. And so, yes, he almost always wore a tie, a coat and tie. And the only time he didn't is when he went out fishing. He was an avid fisherman. And then I realized my father always wore a coat and tie. Now, we're talking about fathers of the 50s and 60s, 40s. And my father, being a minister, always wore a tie and a coat and tie because we were in a parsonage right next to the church. And quite often he would go in between his office in our parsonage and his office in the church. And so he always wanted to look professional. And so, yes, he always wore a tie. So we started talking about it, and most of the gentlemen of the 40s, 50s, and 60s, if they were professional in any manner, would wear a coat and tie all the time, except for maybe if they were recreating. One of the things that made me interested in that was, well, then what did Robert Young do? There's that cough. Robert Young, who is the star of Father Knows Best, we looked it up. He was a general insurance agent, and many people assume that that is a very professional profession, and that he always had a coat and tie on the show. So that's what he did. I'm guessing that most of the people that you might know that grew up, the fathers that you might know that grew up in the 40s and 50s and 60s, probably even today will wear a coat and tie when they go to church. They'll wear a coat and tie. Sometimes if they go out for a special dinner, they'll wear a coat and tie to most events. I still do. I've actually cut down on the tie. When I was running for office, I always had a coat and tie on. It's kind of interesting how our world has changed. We have now, you look at all the candidates for president in this upcoming election, and the only people that wear a coat and tie, I think, Trump always has that long tie that goes down to mid or lower crotch. I've always understood. Never understood why you wear a tie that long, but that's his thing, and it's quite often a red tie, made in Japan or China, I believe. I'm getting that cough tinge back. Anyway, I just thought it was interesting that things like that popped into my head. You know, it's only 38 days till spring. Maybe by then I'll get rid of this cough. I don't know. Anyway, this morning I'm going to talk about, I've been talking about, half the show I've been talking about interesting events that I've been involved with, just so you get to know who I am. And also I've been talking about things that are going on in our government. So that's kind of what I'm going to do. Today I'm going to concentrate, and I know that people will say, oh, you're just bragging on your son. Well, I have my youngest son was really allowed his mother and father to go to a number of events just because of his skills in athletics. I don't want my elder son, Christopher, or my daughter, Amy, to feel shortchanged, because sometimes we will talk about them too. And they were also very accomplished in their own world and still are. And I'm going to do some bragging. So get ready to listen to Dad do some bragging about his kids. But it's kind of interesting because we got to do some things that a lot of parents don't get to do and a lot of parents would love to do. And I'm going to throw in a little bit of my knowledge of athletics to maybe help some of the parents who have upcoming stars. I'm going to put that in quotes. To help them get through those times when, oh, the coach is not playing my son enough, or he's got his favorites. I mean, I hear that all the time. I used to hear it all the time. So anyway, I'm going to talk about that. So I'm going to start off with my son. His name is Andrew Glenn Coble, believe it or not. We actually threw my name into the middle of the mix there. But Andrew is in his mid-30s. He went to Athens High School. He was always very short. and he was short and always blamed me and his mom for making him short and his brother tall. His brother's about 6'3", and Andrew's about 5'11". Andrew always was very athletic when he was very young. He could catch a ball when he was probably 2 or maybe younger, I don't know, and liked to catch a ball. We never asked our children to do things they didn't like to do. We did suggest that they try everything once, but we didn't require that they learn to do X skill. But Andrew wanted to learn all these skills, and he loved basketball. At that time, he was in his low 4s. And so he had to become a point guard because he was way too short to be anything other. Anyway, Andrew became very competent at dribbling and shooting and running and guarding. And he was very fast as a little guy. So he was lucky enough to be given the tools to play just about any sport he wanted to. So he's played most of them. And having grown up in my 18 years of my professional career, were in intercollegiate athletics, and I was absolutely opposed to making a kid or even letting a kid concentrate on one sport. I never thought that did him any good, and I think there have been books recently that have come out that say, especially when they're young, let them play every sport they want to play. Get them out there doing all sorts of things. If they stick on one sport, they get kind of burned out. Now, I know a lot of these traveling teams, I have a grandson who's 14, and he's a left-handed pitcher, and he's 6'3" already at 14. His coaches are really kind of push him towards playing baseball only, and we've been trying to avoid one sport players. So he's pretty good at basketball. He's not great, but he's very good at baseball as a pitcher, and not bad as a fielder as well. But so with all of our children, and I highly recommend with your children that you encourage them to play as many sports as they can. There are several advantages to that. First of all, they're not going to burn out of a sport if they only play it 3 or 4 months of the year, 5 months of the year, and play something else the rest of the year. They're not going to they are going to develop different physical skills. They're completely different skills playing soccer as opposed to playing baseball, or playing football as opposed to playing basketball. You develop different skills, and we'll talk about someday, we'll talk about the movement now not to play football. There are a lot of things that football is doing to make it safer, and that's the direction we have to go, especially with all the head injuries and permanent head injuries that they are finding out that football has caused. Maybe that's my problem. I played football in high school and college. Boy, I didn't have this cough before I came in. Now it's getting a little crazy. So we encouraged all three of our children to play different sports. They all played soccer. They all played baseball. However, my eldest son was not a very good baseball player, and he will admit that. They all played basketball to some degree. And my eldest son, once again, would admit that his skills lay in his speed, not his motor control. But when he would play basketball out in the backyard with his younger brother, which we had no asphalt, they had to dribble on grass, and that caused some interest. Gave the taller guy with a little bit more muscle, gave him a definite advantage, because we'd find Andrew Lane on the ground quite often screaming, foul, foul, foul. Anyway, Andrew grew up, went through all the different sports, was highly successful in all the sports. He was All-State in baseball. He was All-State in basketball. And he would have been All-State in soccer, but the nomination didn't get there, so he was All-District. The nomination didn't get to the appropriate office in time to make him All-State. I'm absolutely certain he would have been. But he didn't. But it's pretty good to be All-State in two out of three sports that you play. And he could have been All-State in football, because he could kick 55-yard field goals. But he wasn't terribly. He played football. I think he played it maybe two seasons as a kicker. One of my proudest moments of watching him play any sport was he kicked it off to a player who ran it all the way back, and it was just the running person with the ball and my son, and my son hit him so hard it knocked the ball free. It didn't get recovered, but Andrew hit him so hard we could hear it in the stands. That was kind of fun, but thinking back about football injuries, it was probably not something I should have reveled in. Anyway, he was All-State in all those sports. As a matter of fact, the year he was All-State in basketball, he was on the same All-State team. However, he was third string, but he was on the same All-State team with LeBron James. Now, LeBron and Andrew never played together. It was just they were on the same team. They had been nominated to the same team. LeBron, by the way, was a freshman when Andrew was a senior, and LeBron was on the first team and Andrew was on the third team. So there is some difference, but that gives you kind of a hint of how good an athlete the young man was. But one of the things that Mom and Dad got to do that was most exciting, let me go back. He was he had an opportunity to play at, he was being recruited by Ohio University. He was recruited a little bit by Wright State. He was recruited by Buffalo. And several Division III and II schools. But he was dating a young lady, and this is another hint to Mom and Dad. if you have a young man or a young woman who is dating, make sure that they think about where they're going to go to school as a college player, because they may not be dating the same person when they go away to college. Andrew elected to go to Marietta and play baseball almost solely because, well, first of all, they said they'd let him play basketball. Now, that's quite often a way of teasing a student athlete into coming to your school. They say, yeah, you can play two sports. Don't always count on that, please. Anyway, Andrew decided he was going to go to Marietta because his girlfriend said if he went farther away than Marietta or some of the closer schools, they were going to have to break up. Well, suffice it to say, he went to Marietta for her, and a few months later, they had already broken up. So, mom and dad, make sure your kid knows exactly the problems of going to a school because of a girlfriend or a boyfriend. But he went to Marietta, and we were lucky enough to watch Marietta is and was a fine baseball program. They could have easily beaten, probably could have easily beaten Ohio University baseball team. That's an interesting story, too. My son was dating Joe Carbone's daughter in high school. Joe was the head coach at OU and heavily recruiting Andrew, quite frankly. They broke up. And that was the last we heard of him being recruited at OU. Anyway, so Andrew went to Marietta, and the first year he was a starter as a rookie. He was started, let's see, I'm trying to remember where he started. I think he started in center field. He was a natural infielder. He was a natural shortstop. But they needed somebody that could catch the ball in center field, and he played there. And then as a sophomore, I think they moved him around a bit to the left field and then started teasing him into second base. By the time he was a junior, he was had already been voted All-American at second base. He was, it was kind of fun to watch his career as it skyrocketed. He was then as a senior, they moved him over to shortstop, his natural position, where he was phenomenal. Both his junior and senior year, they went to the national championship game. And in both cases, they did not. In both cases, they did not win that game. And at Marietta, if you don't win the national championship, if you come in second, you don't get a ring. That always annoyed me. I have rings and watches from all over the place, playing in the Volcano Classic. But anyway, that's just the rule at Marietta. If you're not the national champion, if you're a runner-up to the national champion, you do not get a ring. But that was great fun. Then Andrew graduated. He coached his fifth year, which he was eligible. He coached at Marietta and became. They nominated him Player of the Year as a senior at Marietta, which was a huge honor. That was great fun to go to that event. The whole time, mom and dad are just about as proud as you can be. We got to go down to Florida to watch their spring ball games, which was also fun. We took a truck with a cap on it, and both of our dogs, or all three of our dogs, I guess it was, and our big dog decided he was going to break out of the cap, and did, and occasionally we'd be watching a game, and our dog would run out onto the field. We struggled on that one. Anyway, we had great, great fun traveling with Andrew to all the different events. As after he graduated, he was offered the opportunity to try out for the Cincinnati Reds. And that was probably the proudest day I've had as a papa. We went down to Cincinnati, and Andrew was there with, I guess, 80, 85 kids, all of whom had lots of talent, all of whom were bigger than Andrew at 5'11", or it seemed like they all were. But anyway, they started Andrew at third base. He had never played third base. And his very first, they hit the ball to him, his very first throw over to first base ended up probably somewhere on a street outside of the field in right field. He just way overthrew the ball. That was the only mistake he made the entire day. It was fantastic. He had a wonderful day. From then on, he was right on. His defense was scored very highly by the scouts. His offense was scored pretty highly. He didn't hit a lot. He didn't hit home runs, but he could hit for percentage. As a matter of fact, in college, I think his best year in home runs was about 8, which was pretty good in college, but they only play 40 games. I remember his first home run. That was kind of a fun event. He was a sophomore, I believe, and he hit one over left field at Northern Illinois, which is just there in Northern Ohio, which is just up the road in Ada. And their left field is kind of a short porch. And Andrew hit one out of the park, and as we were they won the game later. And as we were leaving the field, Coach Sholley, who was a phenomenal baseball coach, came over to me. He said, "Oh, I don't know what I'm going to do." And I said, "What's the matter, Coach?" He said, "Now he thinks he's a home run hitter." So we had a good chuckle, and Andrew didn't become a home run hitter, but he could hit for power when he had the opportunity. Anyway, we had a great time. Cincinnati Reds. He played the whole day long. He was in excellent shape, did an excellent job. Then they had the speed contest where everybody was paired up with somebody, and you had to run against that person. And the winner ran against the winner of the next group, and so forth and so on. And it came down to Andrew and one other guy, and he beat that guy. So he was obviously the fastest kid at the tryout camp, and which made Papa pretty proud. Not that I had anything to do with it. His grandmother, on the other side of it, was a phenomenally fast sprinter when she was in college back in the 30s. Anyway, boy, this cough is really driving me crazy this morning. Anyway, at the end, Andrew had squared off with this kind of shorter guy, both of them very fast, and Andrew won the event. And obviously the scouts didn't believe that Andrew was that fast, so they called one of the really tall kids, who was very fast, to come run directly against Andrew, and Andrew tied him. So they knew that their clocks were right. Andrew was that fast. So we were pretty excited, and Andrew was happy. He had a good day. They told us they would get in touch with us if anything was up. And we found out later that he was scored very highly, but they didn't. As a matter of fact, of those 80-some kids, none of them were called back. And I was told by some people that really know the game, to Culvey, I can't remember his first name. He used to pitch for the Pirates. He was that underhand thrower. His son played with Andrew at Marietta, and to Culvey played at Marietta as well when he was young. He told me that the problem with Andrew was that he was 5'11", too short, and he was 22 years old. Well, of course he was 22 years old. He had graduated from college. Well, he was too old. And that's Kent Tekulve, and he kind of knew the game since he was he owned a minor league team, so he gave me pretty good explanation of why Andrew was not on the selected group. But anyway, we enjoyed that, had a good time. Andrew eventually, he coached for the next 5 years or so. He coached at St. Joe's in Indiana, and then he coached up at University of Rochester and met a girl and followed her to California, and that was the end of coaching. But he did, he was invited back on his first opportunity after 5 years to be selected for the Hall of Fame at in Athens, at the Athens High School, which was a very proud day for us all. We went down and watched him be inducted. And he's had a wonderful life. But he's offered mom and dad lots of opportunities to see lots of fun things. And I recommend to you highly, if you have a youngster who's playing any sport or plays any instrument or is exceptionally good in chess or is exceptionally good in anything, stick with them. Go to their events if you can. It's just the smile on their face, even the fear in their eyes before the event, it's worth it being there. And I always, I had a wife, I was in athletics, so my hours were kind of flexible. I could go see these things. My wife went to everything, and we really enjoyed the opportunity of seeing all three of our kids succeed and fail. And they did, all three of them did both. You can't play athletics or play music or be on the theater and not have some failures. But failures are part of life, and it seems that that's a good way to learn how to move forward in your life. And as my show name says, A Progressive Life, you can't progress without failure. Stepping back occasionally is a way to step two steps forward. So always count on good things coming out of success and failure. Anyway, let me, that's the Coble stuff for today. I hope I didn't bore you too badly. I'm going to go back into my notes on my phone and did you? I heard that this morning, that Trump came out with, no president ever worked harder than me cleaning up the messes of other presidents created. I find that just absolutely insane and angering. Now, obviously, as a person who ran for a Democratic position in the state of Ohio, I am not a Trump supporter. I'm sorry. But if my children would have said something like, nobody ever worked harder than I did, and I'm cleaning up everybody else's messes, we would have had a long talk about your advanced ego. I really find that annoying, him saying that. You know, one of the things I was concentrating this week on my own religious feelings, and one of the things that popped into my head is how, I guess you'd call it bullying. Bullying has been a method of churches and religions throughout the time they've been in existence. I am very opposed to bullying. I think people should be allowed to be who they are as long as they don't hurt anybody else. And some of the bullying that I'm talking about is, forcing one person to believe what you believe. I find that bullying, and I think our government uses bullying. Our government, our religions, our clubs. The guy who's in charge, quite often that is a technique to get other people to do what he wants. not what's best for the club or not what's best for the religion or what's best for the politics, but somebody wanting that control. And I find that bullying is what a lot of leaders, and I'm putting that in quotes, use to get ahead, especially in this day and age when the government, cash is really the thing that makes the world go around. And I believe that this government, our society, has been totally taken over by the ultra-rich. I have nothing, I have lots of friends that have plenty of money. And I have nothing against people wanting to make money. But I find, why in the world does anybody, I guess somebody said that Bezos is worth, what, 60, 70 some billion dollars? Why do you need that type of money? Wouldn't it be better served to make sure that the 3 1/3 or 3.5 million people in America don't go to, no one goes to bed hungry at night? Anyway, and I have my friends who I argue with this will always say to me, you're against people getting ahead. I'm not against people getting ahead. And I'm not against money either. Money is a tool. It's not a goal in my life. Another thing that I thought when I was thinking about my religious points of view is that we must always learn to fight evil. But you have to be able to recognize evil. And evil for one person may be different than evil from another person. But truly evil people, most people can see that. And evil, as far as I'm concerned, is somebody that wants everything for themselves and they don't care anything about anybody else. Talking about the money that runs everything, the Labor Secretary Alex Acosta has been credited, I guess, for helping reduce the sentence of billionaire Jeff Epstein, who was convicted of child molestation of dozens of underage girls. And then the Epstein, in his plea, he got 1 year in jail for dozens, molestation of dozens of young girls. There's only one reason why he got only 1 year, and it comes down to money. And if you don't think that's a form of bullying, I disagree with you. Another form of bullying is racism. And if you've listened to me for any time at all, oh, by the way, if you do want to call in, I had a gentleman call last week, 740-383-9944. And I tried very hard to look up. He mentioned that 20 women had been raped by President Clinton. I read and I could not find 20 women that claimed they had been raped by him. I did find on a fact checker that there were three that claimed that he had not raped them, but had sexual relationships with them, and all three of those people were he was not convicted for any of that. And again, money could have had money and power could have had something to say about that. I'm not judging on that. But anyway, I couldn't find the 20. I'm sorry to the gentleman who I promised I would look that up. Anyway, if you keep thinking, I don't care what side of the coin you're on, if you keep thinking, your brain will tell you what's right and what's wrong. And don't rationalize, oh, he's got lots of money, or oh, he's going to appoint somebody to the Supreme Court that will do one thing for us. Do what's right and what's wrong. And I think most people in their gut know what's honest, right, and wrong. One of the things I wanted to mention is in the early 70s, I was singing with the United States Army Field Band. My roommate happened to be an African-American, Bob. I'll give you his first name. And Bob and I got in line for a drink of water at a concert, and this was in Dothan, Alabama. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is because of all the things that are going on in Virginia right now. And people say, oh, that isn't still going on. Well, this was early 70s, and Bob and I got in line for a drink of water. It was right before the concert. Singers quite often drink a lot of water right before the concert, get the chords flexible, and so you don't cough like I'm doing all day. Anyway, Bob, I got a drink of water, and Bob was right behind me, and he started to lean over to get a drink of water, and a man came over and said, "You're not allowed to drink here. Can't you read?" And he called him the N-word. And Bob looked at him, "Read what?" Well, there was a very, very, I mean very faded sign right next to the drinking fountain that says, "Whites only." And so he was told he couldn't drink at a water fountain, even though he had his military uniform on. He was a sergeant, he was an E6 at the time, so he was a staff sergeant. He was going to sing for this gentleman and everybody that was there, and he was told he couldn't drink at the water fountain. And that was only in the early 70s. Now, some of the things, Northam, the governor of Virginia, apparently appeared in had a picture appear in his yearbook in the early 80s. Apparently the attorney general down there also appeared in blackface in the 70s. People are shocked when I tell them the story about Bob and being told he couldn't drink water in the early 70s. That's kind of a culture that's been going on for a long time. And I'm going to say in the South, but it also appears in the North, but not as blatantly. I never went to an event where anybody appeared in blackface. But I'm sure that, and I was a fraternity guy, I'm sure some of the fraternities did have that go on. But I think it tended to be more culturally acceptable if you were south of the Mason-Dixon line. Now, I'm not saying anything bad about Southern people. There are a lot of wonderful Southern people. I don't even think we should call them Southern people. There are a lot of people, good people, that live south of the Mason-Dixon line. Anyway, that's just something that I thought when I was thinking about religion, and I'm certain that that gentleman who told Bob he couldn't drink water at a stupid water fountain, I'm sure he thought he was a Christian man. Back then, if you weren't a Christian, you probably weren't an American. There were very few non-Christians in America in the late 60s and early 70s. Or at least they wouldn't profess to be non-Christian. We really should be proud of our humanity, as far as I'm concerned. Not our lineage. I had an aunt that the one thing she wanted to do in her life was to prove that she was an ancestor of the Mayflower. And apparently there are ways you can do that, and I guess it's an honor. And she proved that our family had, I think, the first child born on the Mayflower. His last name was White, I believe. He was related to us somehow. But what good does it do if 400, 500 years ago, your child your family came to the United States, especially if 400 years ago your family came to the United States on a boat that was hauling slaves. I'm not sure we can do anything about that except for remember we're all human beings, and that was just a real dark mark on the United States. You know, I was watching a I can't remember the name of the show. It's a show where they go back and do lineage on people, and they were doing lineage on Strahan, Michael Strahan, and I can't remember the actress's name that they were doing, both of which were African American. But at the end of the show, the moderator, actually Michael Strahan's, they went all the way back. Charlemagne was his like 16th grandfather. Charlemagne, apparently there was a little bit of whiteness that moved into Michael Strahan's family. And they explained that too. It was quite interesting. But they pointed out that most African Americans in the United States, obviously Americans, are around 25% Caucasian. I don't know whether that changes anybody's mind. Obviously, it didn't change people's mind about our president, President Obama, who was 50% white. They thought of him as 50% black, not 50% white. Actually, we're nothing percent one way or the other. We're human beings, all of us. We cry, we smile, we love, we hate. We all do the same things. And why anybody wants to make another person run another person down, the only thing I can think of is it goes back to that bullying thing. If I can bully you enough, I can get my way, and if I can get my way, then I'll be happier. I don't think you're happier if you get your way. I think you're a happier person. I am a happier person if I help somebody get their way. Not that I go out of my way to try and give other people. If I think we're discussing something that I'm pretty sure I'm right on, I'm not going to let you have your way just because you want to have your way. But I do believe we all would do a lot better if we would learn to use the word empathy, or learn to use the skill of empathy. It's a skill that we don't seem to have in government at all right now. And I believe it's a skill that we all must learn. And empathy means that you put yourself in the place of the person that you're concentrating on. Empathy allows you to feel what a mom feels when her baby is born. Empathy allows you to feel what a father feels when maybe one of his children is killed in an automobile accident. Neither one of those things are things that if you don't have empathy, you just won't feel that. And I believe we, unfortunately, have pulled empathy out of our government. And if we can allow Citizens United to say that governments are, that the corporations are people, surely we should be able to say that we should require people to have empathy for other people if we have to have empathy for a corporation. Government is instituted for the common good, and it's not instituted for one person's good. It's not instituted for the rich person's good. It's not even instituted for the poor person's good. It's instituted so we can all get goodness and work together for a common goal. And in most cases, the common goal, if the common goal is a good common goal, like moving forward instead of moving back, being kind to other people as opposed to being mean to other people, which unfortunately we've had an awful lot of, we're on the right path. Democracy, by the way, it seems to me, was founded based on the inherent goodness and fairness and honesty of people. My question is, does that still hold? I'm not so certain that still holds. I've been very disappointed in our government, obviously. I make it very clear. And I ran for office to try to give people the opportunity to vote for somebody who believes in empathy, somebody who believes in other people, somebody who believes in himself. And I think we all have to learn to believe in ourselves and our next door neighbors and our next country neighbors and even our next continent neighbors. No one should make a blanket statement that all the people in Africa are from S-hole or A-hole countries. So anyway, enough preaching for the day. I hope you enjoyed listening. I'm sorry if I got up on my soapbox too much, but that's kind of what I do on It's a Progressive Life. And I like us all to think about moving forward. You don't have to move forward on everything, but try to keep moving forward on as much as possible to make the world a better place. And we'll see you next Monday.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, Marion, Ohio, The Talking Place. For legendary comedian and the voice of Ursula in The Little Mermaid, Pat Carroll.
And as I teased before we went to the break there, we have on today a lady who I've had on the program, I believe, two times before.